1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 4.
Today on the Covenant Eyes podcast, Luke will be talking to Chris and Cindy Beal. Back in 2002, while working as a worship leader at a church, Chris confessed to committing adultery. Today, Chris will talk about how his growing pornography addiction led to cybersex activities and eventually to multiple affairs. Chris will also talk about the growing double life he lived, being a Christian and a pastor on one hand and engaging in sexual sin on the other. His wife Cindy will also talk about the day Chris confessed to his addiction, his affairs, and the shock she felt at that moment. You won't want to miss today's interview on the Covenant Eyes podcast.
Nine years into your marriage, Chris came to you and confessed something that was shocking to you, confessed to numerous affairs. Can you talk a little bit about that? What questions went through your mind through this whole confession process?
It was kind of a double-sided thing for me. On one hand, I was absolutely shocked because I just could not imagine my pastor husband would have been able to do such a double life, because we were in full-time ministry. And so on the one hand, I was absolutely caught off guard. And on the other hand, things started to make sense, because while I didn't think he had done all the things he just confessed to, I knew something was out of whack in our marriage. We just weren't connecting. We had good days, but we were not close emotionally. And so those kinds of things kind of made sense to me now. And so it was kind of a double feeling there. But, you know, at one point I hated him because it just broken my heart. And, you know, I thought my marriage was over and I was going to be a single mom. And I just went through a whole gamut of scenarios in my mind. But on the other side of it, I was so drawn to him because he was so broken. And so I wanted his comfort because he was fully responsible and fully willing to take up for me and to try to make our marriage work. And so we spent hours on end just crying in each other's arms. And so it's a weird thing. Other women who've gone through it know exactly what I'm talking about when I say I loved him and I hated him. Mm-hmm. It was weird. It was a weird thing that I went through.
You wanted him to hold you 1 minute, and you wanted to slap him the next, kind of thing.
Pretty much. I didn't really go into a state of anger and yelling like a lot of women do. I just went straight into the pit of despair for me. But when I was down there, I needed him, and then he'd be holding me, and I'd be like, "Wait, you caused this?" You know. So it was strange. So,
Chris, you told Cindy that day that one of the reasons why you went down this road of adultery was because of an addiction to pornography.
Correct.
And this is mentioned in Cindy's book online. Can you describe for us just a little bit about how you went from looking at pornography to, you know, not just using it, but then into some form of addiction, and then how that turned into encounters with actual women and the adultery?
Sure. Saw my first Playboy when I was 8. My dad brought it into the house, and that's when the door to that world was opened. And it was a part of my life from a very young age, and, you know, in varying degrees and you know, in frequency. When you know, most people believe that most of the guys that are single who struggle with pornography think that when they get married and they can legally have sex, that struggle is going to go away, and and those of us that have struggled with pornography know that it's gasoline on the fire. The stress of marriage, the relational uncertainty, all of that stuff is even more compelling reason to go to the counterfeit versus the real thing. And because the real thing takes a whole lot more work and a whole lot more, you know, transparency and intimacy. Mm. And so it's easier to go to the counterfeit. And you know, I'm so bad with dates, but I'm going to just say that, let me just say, any date that I say is wrong. So just know that. But I'm going to say, 11 years ago is when it really just amped up. And I was in a role, I was in a pastoral role, and for whatever reason, I found it very easy to kind of have this double life thing. And, you know, late nights at the office, under the guise of I've got to catch up or whatever, you know, lie I was telling at the given time. And I'd look at it, and it became again one of those things that is progressive, as all addictions are, and so, you know, for a significant period of time, it was a visual and then, you know, masturbation deal, and that's what it was. And then somewhere along the way, I stumbled into a chat room. This is back when, you know, Yahoo was just coming out. They were all coming out with the chat rooms and stuff. And I'm sure it was before that, but I was a little slow in the technology world. And what I discovered is that there's a lot of jacked up people just like me. And they're looking to hook up. And that was intriguing to me. And of course, at the time, I would never actually do it. It was just something interesting to think about. And that's I think, where the enemy gets us a lot of times, is when we start to play in our brains little scenarios that we would say, if you ever asked us or cornered us on it, of course I would never do that. But by playing through those scenarios in your brain, you're actually moving the line, that line of morality. You're nudging over and over and over, and you get closer and closer to a point of temptation that you're probably over the line. You've probably surpassed the ability to turn around and walk away. Now, God, you know, Scripture says that God gives us always a way out, but sometimes that way out is earlier than later. You know, I think for many of us that struggle with this, we push that line and we lean over that line to the point of no return. And that's really what happened, is I started interacting with some of these women in a chat room. And then the first time that woman, you know, said, hey, do you want to meet? Of course, you know, the heart starts beating fast. Oh my gosh, no, I don't want to do this. And I did it. And then with all sin, you know, once you've done it once, mentally, you know, the tool of the enemy is, well, you've already done it once. You know, is it really going to be all that worse if you do it twice or three times? And so that's kind of how that progression happened for me. And I found myself in a predicament where I had to begin to really lie to myself. I would do the deal where if I was with a, you know, another woman, I would be driving home, and I would do my ritual with God of profuse confession. And God, I'll never do this again. And I'm so sorry. Will you please forgive me? Start quoting Scripture in my car. And I have to somehow get myself to a place where feeling God's grace in some way so that I'm not completely depressed and broken when I walk in the door, or else Cindy will know I'm something wrong. One of the things that I think is true of most addicts who struggle with sexual addiction or pornography is that over time we probably become very good liars.
Mm.
And I was a very good liar.
Lying to to ourselves and to the
absolutely.
People we love. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because if you can, you know, Scripture says that a lie believed as truth will affect your life as if it were true. And that was absolutely my word. I would tell myself that everything's okay, that God's grace is enough. And it is. Forgiveness is always there. The consequences of sin, though, are coming. Mm. And most of us delude ourselves into believing that a confession exempts us from dealing with the consequences, and that's just not the case. Sooner or later, it's going to find you out, and it did.
Wow. And you said that you were in the pastoral ministry at the time, right?
I was.
Yeah.
I was.
Do you feel like there were elements of that lifestyle, of both the church environment, the style of the job you had, that were somehow open doors for this kind of secret sin to breed and this sort of double life to breed?
Absolutely. First of all, I think that not even just for pastors, but for just followers of Christ, it is so important that we live what we say we believe. And and you know, it's the faith in action that's real faith. And you know, we all have our own baggage. We're all jacked up in some way. And my issue was one of insecurity and the desperate desire for validation. And so I actually found a means of filling that insecurity in ministry. I was a worship leader and an associate pastor at a growing church in the South. And, you know, for lack of better terms, I was kind of the golden boy. You know, I'd lead worship and I'd do youth ministry and man, constantly people would come up saying, "Man, Chris, man, God's just using you to change my life." And as encouraging as that was, and as well-meaning as those people were, it fueled this insecurity and this need for the validation of others. Pornography does the same thing in a very counterfeit way. It you know, when we struggle with, do I measure up? Do I have what it takes? That counterfeit exchange with a computer screen in some way makes me feel like a man, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not real, but at the time it was enough. And the exchange with a few other women in a very counterfeit and sick way validated me. And so I always, for my own personal beliefs, I always believe it's deeper than sex.
Mm-hmm.
There's something much deeper than the sexual hormonal aspect of our struggle that is fueling it. And I'm not a psychiatrist or even a licensed counselor, but you know, it's not until you're really prepared to deal with the real root that I believe you're going to start experiencing victory.
You mentioned the consequences catching up with you. Just from your own story, what were the consequences that caught up with you, and sort of what were the catalysts that led to this confession to Cindy, and how have those consequences continued to affect you?
I got a job offer at LifeChurch.tv, which is, you know, second largest church in the nation. I was going to go be a worship leader. This was back in 2002 when it was, you know, small, 4,000 people, something like that. And it was, we were just stoked. And we had already accepted the job, getting ready to move, selling our house. And it was a Christmas time. And I'm in the mall buying Cindy's Christmas present, and I get a phone call from this girl, one of the girls that I was with, and she said she was pregnant. And that she was relatively confident that it was mine. And she went on to say that she didn't want anything from me. She wanted us to just, you know, go and live our lives and, you know, for me to be a good husband because she knew I was married. And the absolute terror of that moment is unforgettable.
Wow.
And that was step one of the consequences catching up with me. And so we moved and I took the job. And the second consequence, I mean, it happened all pretty quick. So I'm dealing with this thing and I'm thinking, okay, maybe there's a chance I can just move on. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, there's this kid out there who is going to want to know who his dad is, but doesn't. And, you know, he's going to be 18 someday and he's going to have lots of questions. And I'm going to put this kid through decades of hell because it's an inconvenience for me to acknowledge it. I'm a lot of things, but being an abandoning father was a little bit more than I think my moral conscience could handle. And I couldn't get past it, man. I couldn't get past the reality that someday this kid is going to find me and have a lot of questions and I'm going to have no other answers than I was a coward. That's really it. So we get to Oklahoma City. We're on staff at Life Church. Cindy's back in Oklahoma or back in Tennessee trying to sell the house, and she finally moves there and sells the house. And I think she was there for a week, and I was on staff for all of 6 weeks. And all I can say is that the spiritual environment, the spiritual climate on staff of this church is one that doesn't make it very comfortable if you're living in sin, if that makes any sense. The way I described it to my pastor, Craig Rochelle, is that it was almost like the spiritual climate at Life Church was spiritual sandpaper on my soul, and I just couldn't handle it. And so 6 weeks into it, I loved it. It was awesome. I remember sitting in a staff meeting, and Craig said, guys, you know, we've got to be the real deal. We have to keep it clean. We have to live pure. If you've got sin in your life that you need to deal with, if you will confess it, you'll find grace. If you get caught, that may be another story. And I just sat there, and I closed my laptop, and I said, that's it. I'm not gonna be the guy that brings scandal to this church, and I can't keep betraying my wife. And so I closed my computer and I went home and said, honey, we've got to talk. And that was the beginning of our new normal.
This has been part one of our interview with Chris and Cindy Beal. Stay tuned for part two when Cindy will talk about how Chris's addiction damaged their relationship and how she wrestled with thoughts of inadequacy. Chris will also talk about his confession and the healing process that they went through as a couple. Read more about their story in Cindy's free ebook at cindybeal.com. That's CINDYBEALL.com. You've been listening to the Covenant Eyes podcast with your host, Luke Gilkerson. To hear more podcasts, visit CovenantEyes.com/blog.